You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Most of us grew up believing that the apex predator of the dinosaur world is Tyrannosaurus Rex, T-Rex. Well, think again. Thanks to work done by my next guest, we now know that title belongs to Spinosaurus. Bigger than T-Rex, Spinosaurus is the largest predator that ever roamed the world. Let's talk about what it took to unearth this lost giant of the Sahara. As we say hello to Nizar Ibrahim, he's a paleobiologist and comparative anatomist from the University of Detroit Mercy. Welcome. It's good to have you on Stateside.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So to talk about Spinosaurus, we're going to focus on their Cretaceous period in the Sahara. So what, like 100 million years ago?
Yeah, roughly 100 million years ago. So the Cretaceous is the final chapter of the age of dinosaurs. And T-Rex, probably the most famous dinosaur, lived in the Cretaceous in North America. But Spinosaurus lived in a very different kind of environment in a different part of the world, in the Sahara in North Africa.
And you have described North Africa. I was watching some of your talks with National Geographic, and you've described North Africa in the Cretaceous as a predator's paradise. Why was that?
Yeah, it's a very strange place. So when I started working there, I was surprised that we're finding so many different fossils of ferocious predators. So we're finding different kinds of crocodile-like hunters, some as long as a school bus. We found remains of giant predatory fish, huge predatory flying reptiles, and several T-Rex-sized predatory dinosaurs. So T-Rex was really the only giant predatory dinosaur in its ancient environment. But in this place, we have all these giant predators coexisting in the same place at the same time. And so that's why I do describe it as a predator's paradise and as maybe the most dangerous place in the history of planet Earth.
Amazing to stop and think about that. Now, I know that you are not the first to discover bones from Spinosaurus, and that was actually done by a German paleontologist at the start of the 28th century, a man named Ernst Stromer, and his work pretty much destroyed during World War II.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very dramatic background story. Ernst Stromer was one of the early pioneers of paleontological exploration of the Sahara. And he actually wasn't looking for dinosaur fossils. He was looking for fossils of ancient mammals. But on his final expedition to Egypt, he ended up finding this lost world of Saharan dinosaurs. And the most spectacular dinosaur he uncovered and described was Spinosaurus. He only had a small part of the skeleton, but the bones he had showed without the shadow of a doubt that this was a unique predatory dinosaur, a giant predatory dinosaur, but also a really unique one, very different from other predatory dinosaurs. And so this one and only existing Spinosaurus skeleton was put on display in Munich in southern Germany, where Stromer worked. But then in World War II, an Allied bombing raid destroyed the museum. And Stromer lost pretty much all of his incredible discoveries, including this one and only skeleton of Spinosaurus.
So what more perfect fit for a young German Moroccan scientist like you than building on the work he had done in Morocco? So off to the Sahara you go. And through luck and finding a fossil hunter who had a bone you'd never seen before, you succeeded in a search that was truly bigger than a needle in a haystack. It was a needle in the Sahara. Tell us what that moment was like when you realized you had found bones from Spinosaurus.
It's hard to describe. It's something I wanted to do for such a long time, you know, finding a new skeleton of Spinosaurus. And many people tell you, well, you're probably not going to find a new skeleton. Many people have tried and failed. And so, you know, it can be pretty discouraging. So if you then find a skeleton, it's a truly magical moment. And the really incredible thing is that the Spinosaurus skeleton we uncovered is more complete than the one that Stromer had, and it revealed some pretty incredible things about this animal. And it remains now the only Spinosaurus skeleton in existence. So the first one was destroyed in World War II, and so ours is now the only existing skeleton of this dinosaur.
And you have said Spinosaurus forces paleontologists to stop and rethink everything they thought they knew about dinosaurs. Why is that?
Well, Spinosaurus looks very different from other predatory dinosaurs. And kind of breaks the mold. You know, Spinosaurus has long, slender jaws like a crocodile. It has a giant sail on its back. And most importantly, it has a number of anatomical features suggesting that it spent at least some of its time in the water, probably hunting giant fish in a huge river system that existed in the Sahara 100 million years ago. So it was, you could say, a water-loving dinosaur. And that's very different from other predatory dinosaurs. So it looked very different from, say, T-Rex, and it probably also had a very different kind of, you know, feeding biology and lifestyle.
And when you think of the size, yeah, give us a sense, because I know you've been able to use technology and you have been able to build a life size, you recreate this skeleton, and you can get a sense of the size. Tell us about him.
Yeah, we put together a digital skeleton of Spinosaurus at first. So we reconstructed the animal digitally in a computer. And it became clear that this was an absolutely enormous predatory dinosaur, about 50 feet in length. That's quite a bit longer than the longest T-Rex, which is mounted at the Field Museum in Chicago. So it was the longest predatory dinosaur. But of course, if you just see the skeleton on your computer screen, you don't really get a feel for the size of this animal. It's just a number. So we decided to actually mount a life-sized Spinosaurus skeleton. And we used cutting-edge technology, things like 3D printing and machining, to create a life-sized version of our digital skeleton. And when I first walked up to this kind of life-sized version of the skeleton, my jaw just dropped. You know, that's when you really fully appreciate the size of this thing. And it, you know, has these massive claws, and the skull is about as long as a person. And then you think about this animal in the flesh, covered in skin and muscles, hunting giant fish in this river system, and it just blows your mind.
Can people see this skeleton? Is it on display?
Well, it was on display for about 5 years as part of a National Geographic traveling exhibit. And it was on display in Washington, D.C., and also in several places in Europe, including Barcelona and Berlin and Milan. But that exhibit has come to an end. But we are working on a new exhibit, which is also going to feature Spinosaurus and some of the other creatures that lived alongside Spinosaurus.
So we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Stay tuned.
What brought you to Detroit, to the University of Detroit Mercy?
Well, a number of factors. The biology department at Detroit Mercy has a nice mix of researchers from different disciplines. You know, it's not a department where everybody's working in, you know, genetics or molecular biology. You kind of have a nice spread, which I think is important for a biology department. And of course, my teaching responsibilities at the university are in areas like comparative anatomy and evolution, which is, of course, right up my alley. And so, you know, those are the things I really enjoy talking about. And I can insert some of my ongoing research projects into my teaching. And you know, that's something I really enjoy doing. So
I know you were a little kid growing up in Germany who loved dinosaurs. I guarantee you have students sitting in front of you who love them from the time they were little. I have my 7-year-old grandson, Liam, is a dinosaur maniac. He can and he's so excited that I'm talking to the guy that found Spinosaurus skeleton. So, how many of these dinosaur-obsessed kids grow up to be paleontologists like you?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously, the number of paleontologists in the world is relatively small, but dinosaurs have this universal appeal, and it's not just kids. That's the thing that I notice when I do a lot of talks in front of large audiences across the United States and Canada, and also, you know, when we put together museum exhibits and you look at the people attending those exhibits. It's a cross-section through society. You know, you have retired people and parents with kids and teenagers and very young kids. And that's the thing. Dinosaurs have a universal appeal. And I don't know if you have a theory. why are they so incredibly popular? You know, why does Liam love dinosaurs so much? And I think it's a difficult question to answer. But they have this universal appeal. And the interesting thing about dinosaurs is your interest in dinosaurs is not necessarily going to lead to a career in paleontology. But many scientists discovered their love for science and research and exploration through dinosaurs. So in the words of one of my colleagues, I think he once said that dinosaurs or paleontology is the gateway drug to science.
Very, very true. And but when you think of the fascination so many of us do feel, and I have had that since a child as well, what lessons should mankind learn from the dinosaurs and what happened to them?
Well, there are a couple of things we can learn from the dinosaurs, and I think that might be part of their appeal. You know, they're so, some of them are so gigantic, and they were around for such a long time, and they ruled our planet for a very, very long time. And our own little furry ancestors, small little mammals, literally lived in the shadows of the dinosaurs. And so we kind of look at these creatures, and we think, you know, they were so powerful, so dominant. And then they disappeared, right? And I think there's certainly a lesson there for us. Although I should add one thing we now know. One branch of the dinosaur tree did survive the mass extinction event at the end of the Cretaceous. And those are the animals we now call birds. They're direct descendants of feathered dinosaurs. We know that some dinosaurs had feathers. But yeah, I think it's not just dinosaurs. I mean, the history of life on Earth in general can teach us many very important things. You know, we are now living on a planet undergoing some pretty dramatic changes, you know, and you know, we are causing most of these changes. I mean, you know, we're overfishing our oceans, we're modifying habitats all around the globe, and, you know, we see extinction levels that are very, very high. Some people might even suggest we are in the middle of a new mass extinction. And this one is not caused by a meteorite or volcanoes, but by us, by humans. And if we want to understand the long-term consequences of these global scale events and changes, the only way to really understand these long-term changes is to and consequences is to travel back in time. Because, you know, if you look at the past, you will see mass extinction events, changes in climate, changes in sea levels, all of those things. And you can actually see, how did these events impact our planet and life on our planet? So I think it gives us a really important perspective, a kind of long-term, deep-time perspective.
Nizar Abraham is a paleobiologist and a comparative anatomist from the University of Detroit Mercy. Through his excavation in the Sahara, we now know that Spinosaurus is the largest predator that ever roamed the world. Fascinating work, and we want to thank you so much for sharing it with us on Stateside.
Sure, you're very welcome.